from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we talk all things gifting. Customs and expectations are changing when it comes to gift giving, whether it be to coworkers, teachers, even significant others. And gifts can imply a lot of things about the receiver as well as the gift giver. Also, when is it okay not to gift? We look at the psychology and etiquette around gift giving and take your gifting questions after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny. It's gift-giving season. Time to figure out what's an appropriate gift to give, how much to spend, when it's okay not to give one, and to worry over how our gifts could be received. Peloton, anyone? So in this hour of Forum, we're looking at the psychology and etiquette behind gift giving during the holiday season. And we want to hear from you. What are you stuck on when it comes to gifting? What kind of gifts do you like to give or receive? And feel free to share memorable gifting experiences, whether good or bad. We're joined by Diane Gottsman. She's founder of the Protocol School of Texas and an etiquette and modern manners expert. Good morning, Diane Gottsman.
Hello, Mina. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being here. We also have Jeff Gallick with us. He's associate professor of marketing at Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business. Hello, Jeff Gallick.
Hi, Mina. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. And so, Jeff, you study consumer behavior and psychology. So what trends have you been seeing in terms of people's preferences for the gifts that they receive?
Sure. So one of the things that we see a lot is people trying to give gifts that dazzle other individuals upon receipt. So anything that's sparkly, anything that's new, anything that's exciting, I think it has been and continues to be something quite popular. I don't know if you want to get into it now, but that's not necessarily the best thing that a gift giver can actually do.
You mean not to go after the wow factor?
That's right.
Why not?
Well, what we've learned from research is that recipients of gifts are much more interested in gifts that actually are useful to them and have value over the long term. That moment of surprise when a gift is exciting and fantastic and opened is nice, and I think that's an important piece of gift giving. But that's something that givers focus on, and recipients don't really. That's a one-second experience. Receivers have a gift for a long time, and when they think about what kind of gifts they really enjoy, it's those that are long-lasting in enjoyment, not just ones that happen to be exciting at that moment. Givers make the mistake of focusing on that moment of surprise, and they don't really think much to whether a gift is going to be useful or enjoyable over a long period.
So what's an example of a wow gift, and what's an example of a gift that's more practical, more useful over the long term?
Sure. Anything trendy is something that I think is more of a surprise, more of a now, you know, in the moment surprise type gift. If it happens to be the hot gift of the season, everybody wants to do it, and that's fine, but it's not necessarily something that's going to last. Fads are fads for a reason, right? They come and they go. Things that last for a long time can be much more meaningful. So, for instance, we have work looking at gifts that are sentimental in nature. They're not things that are fashionable. They're things that have a relationship and a connection to the individual that they're giving a gift to. Those last forever, and those are gifts that are exceptionally well received.
So, Diane Gottsman, you've talked a bit about how you think we need to be better at receiving gifts. What do you mean by that?
Well, often we may, especially based on what Jeff is saying, you know, it's the wow factor or it's what's trendy, and it may not be what that person really wants. Whatever the reason, when someone receives a gift and they don't like it, often they're caught off guard and they don't know what to say. And it results in hurt feelings because we want to see wow and we see their face saying, ugh. So I'm 100% behind what Jeff says in terms of giving a gift that means something to someone. It's not the price point, but it's about the emotion that's involved with it. You know, it's a love letter, you know, over the holiday season to a mate or to a child, you know, somebody that you love dearly and you want to express your sentiment to them. An adult child, by the way, a little kid wants toys. But, you know, that's more meaningful than something that they're not going to use But as a receiver, we need to know how to accept the gift gracefully. And that's by smiling authentically and saying, thank you. You know, those words are meaningful.
Whether or not you like it, thank you for that person taking the time to think about you and giving you something.
It took time to pick that gift out, unless they're ordering online, and we do that as well, but that still takes some time. Yes, so every gesture deserves gratitude and a thank you.
What Diane is saying, Jeff Gallick, reminds me of the point of gift giving, which we often forget, which is really about strengthening your relationship to someone. You're typically giving a gift to create a stronger connection, show appreciation, and strengthen whatever relationship you currently have.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think gift givers are almost always, although there are exceptions, well-intentioned. They want to give a gift that a recipient likes. And at the end of the day, the reason we give gifts, if you think back societally, is to build stronger relationships among individuals. That's very important. It's a big piece of societal connections.
So then what do you mean when you say malicious gift giving?
Yeah. So malicious gift giving is perhaps a little bit intense, but it's the idea that not every gift giver is acting in the best interest of the recipient. So as an example, some of our work has looked to see if an individual is willing to give a gift that's better than something that they already own. So for lack of a better example, if I own an iPhone Model 7, I'm never giving somebody else an iPhone Model 8. There's just no way I'm going to give a gift that's better than what I have because it's going to undermine how good an item I have. And so this potential envy that might happen when I give a superior item to a recipient, even when that gift is the perfect gift, you know the person wants it, you know it'll make them happy, you'd rather give them the cash equivalent than give them that item.
And I've read about the phenomenon of take a hint gifts, where people will actually give someone a gift because they want them to take a hint about their behavior, maybe even their hygiene, so they could give a gift like deodorant or breath mints along with other things. I mean, is that a common phenomenon? And do you know if, you know, how that falls along gender lines or anything else?
So I unfortunately can't speak to that from a research perspective. I would say that if the goal of a gift is to make the recipient happy and build a relationship, sending a signal that is perhaps not the friendliest may not be the way to go.
Well, we have Priscilla who writes in and she says, you shouldn't ever need someone to open the gift you gave them in front of you. That's a weird expectation in the first place. What do you think about that, Diane Gotsman? The feeling that you should open it in front of them. Is that required?
Well, it would depend on the circumstances. If you're exchanging gifts with each other, I think that would be one of the things that you anticipate. You have lunch with someone, a girlfriend, and I hand them a gift. They hand me a gift, and she opens her gift. I can't just sit there. You know, so it really has to do with the situation. If there are multiple gifts, like hostess gifts, when you host an event and you receive multiple gifts, you don't have to open all of those gifts in front of them, you know, in front of the gift givers, because you're busy. You're doing other things.
Well, we are talking about gift giving this hour. And since we just opened up with a comment, I want to invite more commenters. You can share your questions about gifting, share the stories about the best or worst gift you ever got. If you've landed on an approach to gifting for your family members or your coworkers, your kids, teachers, let us know what those are. And the number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. The place to post your comments is Facebook, Twitter, our website, or email us at forum@kqed.org. So Kavitha writes, one of the decisions my family has made this year is that we will not be giving any gifts. The advantages include a reduction in our carbon footprint, waste, and clutter. Instead, we'll be making contributions to animal rescues and nature conservancy efforts. And I totally hear Kavitha, Jeff and Diane, because I don't want to add stuff to my loved ones' lives, especially if it's not stuff that is very useful to them or will be in the long term. But at the same time, I have heard people say that the gift to a charity in their name by someone isn't exactly something they appreciate, especially if it means handing over your contact information so that the receiver suddenly is getting requests and is on the email lists of these organizations that they didn't intend to be on. What are your thoughts about gifting those ways?
There's actually a little bit of research. There's a little bit of research that speaks to exactly what you're saying in suggesting that as much as I would love for gifts to be pro-social in nature, the social ties that are created from giving gifts exist in almost all categories except for that one. And so unfortunately, as much as, again, I am a supporter of nonprofits, the research suggests that when you give a gift that is a donation to a charity in someone's name, it doesn't build that social connection as much as anything else does.
And Diane, you wanted to add something, it sounded like.
Well, we're talking about that social connection. And if somebody says, you know, instead of adding more toys to, you know, to the pot, to my family's, you know, already overflowing closets, please just donate in my child's name to a nonprofit. That's one thing. If you are sending something to someone in their name as a donation, they're not really going to be the one who gets solicited. It's going to be you because you're the one who gave the credit card over the telephone most of the time. So, but, you know, I think it is all about building a relationship, and you have to think about that person that's receiving the gift. It takes time. It takes effort. So it's about building relationships and strengthening them. So that's what a gift is all about.
And we're actually joined now by Carolyn Hacks. She's an advice columnist for The Washington Post. Welcome to Forum, Carolyn Hacks.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We were just talking about gifts that don't add stuff necessarily, like donations to charity. And one of the things that you've written about is just the increase in requests for experience gifts. First, what are experience gifts? And talk about why you see that as growing in popularity.
I think you said it at the beginning. It's just people are just buried in stuff. And the other thing is, since there's so little novelty now with things that people aren't excited just by getting something. So when they do want to add to the pile, they want to have something very specific. And it sounds very selfish, but I think it's not. I think it's just people are making decisions about what they want to keep and what they want to maintain. And so when you have an experience gift, it's something like tickets to something that matters to you, or spending time with somebody. And I think that's the change. You don't have anything piling up, but you're getting to enjoy a gift that's even more personal, I think, now than an extra sweater.
And even more personal can also mean that can experience gifts be kind of fraught? And the reason that I ask is because you don't want to give someone the wrong experience, because you would have to know quite a bit about them, right, to give them an experience that really would be meaningful. The other thing about it is there an expectation that you would do the experience with them?
Well, let me go back for a second. I'm not sure. Maybe it's just an occupational hazard, but I don't see any gift that isn't potentially fraught. there's always a way to get it wrong, and there's always the chance that if you get it wrong, that the person's going to perceive that as having a greater message than you ever intended. So I think at least with experiences, you can, again, you're not adding to a pile, a physical pile of things, but certainly you do have to understand the people, I think, as much so as getting a thing. Any gift involves trying to put yourself into that person's shoes. And I think actually that step is where most gifts go wrong, because people so often still buy the gifts that they want for somebody, or they buy a gift that they imagine the person wanting. And it's usually sometimes people buy gifts for the person they want you to be and not for the person you are. And I just had one last week. I'm laughing. It's so awful. But somebody sent a story into my chat last week that a now ex-husband, they were going to do a one gift. They were going to buy one gift for the other. And so she put all of her thought into buying him a gift. And he bought her a power tool that he'd been wanting. And said that he bought it for her so that he would build a project for her. And I just, it's again, the failure is, yeah, obviously the failure is in her opening a gift that he wanted, but it's right at that initial decision stage. Am I going to do something for this person I'm supposed to care about? And if you make that decision right, chances are you're going to get at least close. You bring it around to the experience gift. And if you are actually paying attention to the person you're buying for, you're probably going to get close, or at least it's going to show that you thought about the person. And I think that's, if you accomplish that, I think you're in really good shape. I don't think we're shooting for perfection here.
And I should remind listeners, Carolyn Hacks, that you do the yearly hootenanny of holiday horror. So I'm sure you have lots of stories of gifting gone wrong.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant actually. And I mean, even the title, the whole thing is tongue in cheek. It's just the season just makes people so stressed, and it's supposed to be a celebration. And so the chat where people write in their disaster stories to get a good laugh. Really, so much of it comes from just the expectations that build up. Like, this is going to be great, or this is going to be special, or this is going to be like it has been every other year. And I think that we humans tend to produce our funniest material when we have high expectations of something, because
yes,
they're almost never met.
So this mismatched expectations really plays out in the gift-giving sphere.
Yes, in the whole season, yes.
Let me bring our callers in and bring Grant from San Francisco into the conversation. Hi, Grant.
Hi, how's it going? Good morning.
Good morning.
So I had a question. What if we don't want to receive gifts? I have a lot of people in my family who like to give gifts, and I've expressed a desire not to receive a gift for various reasons, and they still feel it obligatory to give a gift. So what's the best way to go about declining gifts without seeming cruel?
Grant, thanks. Diane Gottsman, this seems like it's in your wheelhouse. What do you think?
Right. So I think once we say, please, you know, skip the gifts for me, and, you know, I do think you should give them an alternative, you know, like donate in my name to one of your favorite charities or whatever that would be. But if they do give you a gift, I think it would be rude to slap their little hand and say, no, I didn't want it, because they really do have good intentions. They're not trying to be contrary most of the time. It's much like this. It's much like saying, please don't bring a gift to the party. It's my birthday. Don't bring a gift. And some people show up with one anyway because they don't know any better. You know, the rule is if somebody says, please don't, then we don't. So I think their intentions are good, and you just graciously accept it and say thank you in the following year, which would be next year now, say, you know, can we all come to terms with, you know, an agreement? Let's all exchange one gift. You know, let's pick a name. Let's do a Secret Santa. Try and find an alternative. But I don't think that there's any tried and true way to decline a gift without coming across as being rude.
Well, it sounds like you're saying then there should be some work done ahead of time. That Carolyn Hacks, any thoughts on telegraphing that ahead of time in a way that wouldn't offend anybody?
Well, at this point, I believe in just saying it. And I maybe it's just the number of years that this has come up and the number of times people have tried to say it nicely and it hasn't worked. I think just being blunt, say, please, no gifts for me, please. I know you mean well. I know you want to do this. I know you hate to hear this. I mean, I think be absolutely upfront with your request. And although I do agree that when people ignore you and give you a gift, you say thank you. But the more blunt you can be at the beginning, I think the better.
Well, how should you handle it if someone gives you a gift and you don't have a gift for them? Carolyn Hacks.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry I didn't get anything for you. I thought we weren't exchanging gifts. Something. I think the authentic response, if you feel awkward, you just say, oh gosh, I feel so awkward. You were so kind to get me something. Thank you.
But are you obligated, Diane Gottsman, to say, I didn't get you one? Or can you just say, oh, thank you, and then just sort of move on?
So the protocol would be just to say thank you so much. You know, don't try and explain. Don't say, oh, gosh, your gift is in the trunk of my car and it's not wrapped, so I'll bring it to you next week, because we all know what that means, that you're running out to get him a gift. But don't feel the need to explain. Just say thank you. Thank you so much. I really think it is an awkward moment, but not every gift needs to be reciprocated. If you are on a budget, and we all have to have a budget, we all should have one and then stick to it. And if people show up unexpectedly, if you have a few little items, you know, tucked away, great. But I'm not even an advocate of telling you to do that. You know, if somebody comes up and hands you a gift, just say thank you so much. Even though we want to say, we want to give three reasons afterwards or how we feel uncomfortable, just thank you. We have to practice. Thank you so much.
Jeff Gallick, is re-gifting okay, you know, is that less of like a terrible, rude thing to do now that people are trying to reduce, you know, stuff and trying to reuse?
Sure. So I can't speak to the etiquette. We'll let Dan talk about that. But if, from a research perspective, what we know is that as long as the recipient, the ultimate recipient, isn't aware of the regifting, it's not going to matter at all. And this does also speak to the idea of thoughtfulness, right? So what recipients hone in on isn't the price of a gift. It isn't the quality of a gift. It isn't how flashy it is. It's the fact that a giver took the time to do something nice for them. So if a recipient knows that the giver is regifting something, that negates all the thoughtfulness that comes from it, right? It's saying you didn't even have a minute to spend to think about what I would want. All you did was take something you didn't want and hand it off to me. And so it's pretty easy to give a good gift if you give a little thought to it. That is one of the cases where it's going to undermine it significantly.
Well, let me bring Alice in. Hi, Alice.
Hi. So I have a situation where we're very comfortable middle-class people, so we have enough money to give gifts. And I asked my husband yesterday, so what are you going to get our 14-year-old son? And my husband's reply was, I just bought him sneakers. And I just have this issue with people, parents, giving gifts that are necessities. We have to buy our son sneakers and underpants and socks. I want him to think about my son. So how do I deal with my husband and his lack of thoughtfulness for other people and giving?
Hmm. Carolyn Hacks, any thoughts for Alice?
Well, I would say I'm guessing you know that these aren't special sneakers because there are definitely
nice sneakers.
Here.
Yeah.
Because my kids, if I'm buying them a certain level of sneakers, that's definitely a necessity. But there's also the upgrade territory, which would be considered a gift by them. And so I'm assuming you know this already. And in that case, I think you just put it really well that you understand that he sees that as a gift for your son. But the message there is that just because you need it in December, I'm going to call it a gift. And that's not the same thing as taking the time to think about something special. And I think you can coach somebody along on that just by pointing out without sounding exasperated, if possible, that maybe, you know, that's what we get him anyway. So let's see what else would really make him happy.
Jack Alec, what is the evidence on people spending a lot of money on a gift? Is that really important to people?
No, it turns out it's not. And givers think it matters a lot, so they'll spend quite a bit to make a recipient happy by buying something more lavish. It turns out, again, it comes back to thoughtfulness. As long as you meet that minimum requirement of having exerted some effort to give a gift, you don't have to spend any money at all. The price doesn't relate at all to how much a recipient values a gift.
And again, Jeff Gallick is Associate Professor of Marketing at Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business. We've got Diane Gottsman on the line. She's founder of the Protocol School of Texas. And Carolyn Hacks, advice columnist for The Washington Post. And we've got you, our listeners, with your questions and comments about gifting. 866-733-6786 is the number to call in with your questions, or you can post them on Facebook, Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. We'll take up more of them after the break. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. There's a lot to figure out these days during this season of giving when expectations for gifts are changing. Some people want experiences versus things. Some don't want gifts at all. We're looking at the psychology and etiquette behind gift giving this holiday season and taking your questions and hearing your experiences of this both joyous and stress-inducing ritual. With us is Diane Gottsman. She's the founder of the Protocol School of Texas, an etiquette and modern manners expert. We've also got Jeff Gaelic with us. He's an associate professor of marketing at Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business, and Carolyn Hacks, an advice columnist for The Washington Post. And you, our listeners, the number 866-733-6786 to join our gifting conversation. You can also post them on Twitter, Facebook, our website, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And Olivia writes, my tip, keep a note on your phone with the names of friends or family. Throughout the year, as inspiration strikes or they mention wanting something, write it down. It's so simple, but people are delighted when something they mentioned offhand 6 months ago appears. You know, Diane Gottsman, it's a great point. How do you determine who to put on that list? Because it seems like these days you could give gifts or even some are expected, say, for your hairstylist or your mail carrier. I mean, it could go very far. So how do you decide who makes that gift-giving list?
It's based on the relationship you have with them. So if you have a distant cousin that you haven't seen in 5 years and you're still exchanging Christmas cards and you can't even remember, you don't even know that they moved twice already. You know, that's not the one that you want to give a gift to or even send a card to at this point. So you give gifts to people that mean something to you through, you know, in your life, and they do something for you throughout the year, like a service provider, a hairstylist, for example. Mine is my family. I see her regularly. Other people might go to somebody different each time. So it's based on that relationship.
Well, Nick writes, this whole discussion about gift giving has one huge elephant in the room. You're very much talking about everything from a white American cultural perspective. Please remember that this is not the only culture in your audience. That is something that I thought about, Jeff Gallick, as I was looking at some of your studies. And I was curious if the research that you did, you know, you found that these preferences were pretty stable across race, gender.
When we sample individuals to participate in our research, we do our best to be representative of the population of the U.S. So that's the limiting factor as far as I'm concerned. We really can't speak to cultures outside of the U.S. because we haven't conducted work there. But we try our best to represent all genders and races as best we can when we collect data. And we haven't seen significant differences across those. Not yet, anyway.
Well, Kirsten writes, we collect cash for our preschool and elementary teachers. The cash is divided evenly across all the teachers at the preschool to ensure fairness. This doesn't preclude families from giving more personal gifts on their own, too. Teacher gifts. I'd be curious to get your thoughts, Carolyn Hacks, on the phenomenon of teacher gifts and if they've sort of crossed into the territory of really being expected at this point.
I have a problem with the idea of expected gifts anyway, and it can be teacher gifts or even wedding gifts or Christmas gifts. So, and actually, I have a different perspective that I bring to this too, because my husband is a teacher, and so I have heard over the years through him, through his community, and through, of course, I have three kids and all of their teachers. And my understanding is that the teachers love to be remembered, but they would really prefer not to get stuff as well, because unless it is particularly carefully selected for some specific need that has been, or it's just basically the same standards that we have that we're talking about now, where you really know the person and you know what would be right. But the sense of obligation around getting another mug or another something for your teacher actually puts teachers in an awkward position. They love to be noticed. They love that their families care about them, but the pile of things can get overwhelming over time. When everybody gets you a little gift, that means you're in possession of year after year after year of 20 little gifts, and it gets to be a bit much. But gift cards, lovely.
So you like this idea?
Underpaid.
You like this idea also of pooling that our commenter wrote in about then potentially,
yes,
as well.
That's a great idea, especially if it's cash. I really do wish that educators were paid appropriately, but they're not, and so. Yes, anytime you can get families together, this is going to be really sort of unfair because you're going to have teachers in a wealthier community doing much better than teachers in the less wealthy communities. So it's not really any kind of answer for giving these teachers what they deserve. But in the limited sense that we're talking about, if you can just recognize that a little something to make their lives better was always appreciated. Again, not required, going back to your initial question.
Well, Sharon in Sonoma, join us. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, good morning. My comment is on one of the best gifts I've ever received, and that was a number of years ago. I had been invited to family, friends, dear friends, for Thanksgiving dinner, and I had commented on a small piece of artwork that she had on her wall, how much I liked it. And a few weeks later, they came to my house for Hanukkah, and she had taken it off her wall, wrapped it, and brought it to me as a gift.
Well,
and it's been such a special piece ever since that whenever I've moved, it's the last thing I take off the wall and the first thing I hang in my new home.
Well, Sharon, I'm glad you shared that story because, Jeff Gallick, why did that work? Why did that make Sharon, you know, so happy?
Sure. So I think the critical piece here is that the person who happened to give her that painting knew exactly what she wanted. And it, again, comes back to this idea of wanting to delight somebody when they open a gift versus what they actually want. If we take the time to find out what our recipients want, and in our culture, that's unfortunately taboo, right? We can't ask somebody what they want, or we can, but we're not supposed to. We could do much better. So what's interesting in our research is we find that even when people ask a recipient what they want and give them that gift, which seems very awkward to the giver, recipients are thrilled, right? There's a reason we have wedding registries. People want certain things. They need certain things. Going off registry, as an example, is something that people think is fun and exciting, and it's kind of the cool thing to do, and yet it doesn't serve the function of the gift, right? The recipients wanted something in particular. If you know what it is and you're fortunate enough to have a registry, follow it. And that's true for Christmas gifts or any other holiday.
And my guess is that Sharon probably felt hurt. I mean, she happened to make this comment and her friend picked up on that and remembered that and wrapped the gift and gave it to her, which might also be why this person who's writing in might be feeling a little frustrated by her her sibling. Jennifer writes, "Every Christmas, my brother sends me one of those god-awful wine and food baskets. It's chock full of stuff that goes directly to the bin because it's full of gluten. He knows I have an autoimmune disease and can't eat gluten, junk food, and very bad wine. Ideas on how I can redirect this his largesse." Diane Gottsman, any thoughts for Jennifer?
You tell him. And you tell them kindly. So, and again, it goes back to communication and saying, you know, thank you for thinking of me. You know, you send me these baskets every year, and I'm really conscious of what's, you know, the money that you're spending and the waste, because there's many of the things in these food baskets that I can't eat, and I don't want it to go to waste. If this is a close family member, you can, or a close friend, you can certainly let them know. I think that it's important to gently guide them.
Well,
because you're just going to be tossing it, and that's a waste.
Safe in San Jose, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning. After a couple of years of marriage, I think the best gift my wife prefers is the one she chooses herself. The question is, which one is more important? Is it the surprise factor or getting the perfect gift? Thank you.
Thank you, Safe. Anyone want to take that?
Sure. So I think it comes back to the comment I made a moment ago. Getting somebody what they want is a perfect gift. So as an example, related to my own marriage, is my wife and I have a Google Doc where we post items that we would like to get as gifts. These are things that we feel a little silly buying for ourselves. Maybe they're a little too expensive or just a little lavish, but would be wonderful gifts. There's no mystery there in what I want or what my wife wants. And yet it's still a little bit of a surprise when on a birthday or on a, you know, Christmas or Hanukkah or something, one of those gifts appears. We're not surprised at the gift, but we're still thankful for the sentiment that somebody took, that our, my wife or I took to actually do something nice for one another.
Well, Nancy writes, sometimes if you're polite about a gift you receive and don't much like or can't use, you then get more of the same in subsequent years. How do you let people know nicely that they missed the mark? I mean, Carolyn Hex, I know we should tell them. I think that's been like the overarching advice here. But I think what this person is specifically asking is, how do you tell them nicely?
I struggle with this. I really do, because I think you should err on the side of telling sooner rather than later, because if you're going to say something, because in the 10th year that you get this gift, you're telling somebody, I've been unhappy for the past 10 years with this gift. And if you tell them the second time you get it, at least then they're only realizing they've been unhappy twice. So I actually know of a story, and I really think this is one of those cases where I would keep quiet. And it's somebody who has gotten one of those repeat gifts, and it never liked it. And they're now in year like 10 or 15. And it's something that the giver takes great pride in. And I was thinking about, okay, at some point you should probably say something. And then I realized that the gift now is the gift of letting the person be excited to give you this, if that makes any sense. Mm. And I think that keeping that he thinks he's giving her a gift, but actually she's giving him a gift and preserving his sense that he's doing something great. And if this were it's a very inexpensive gift, so I think that factors into it as well, because I think if you're causing financial pain to do this, maybe you would step in. But there is an argument for just making it sort of the sort of messy beauty of caring about somebody.
Well, Shiva writes, what is going on with giving soap as a gift? Do people not think of the intended or unintended message of you need to wash or you smell? In the Armenian culture, giving soap actually means that one is washing their hand off of the friendship. You know, we like to give gifts cross-culturally, and I wonder if any of you have advice on how to make sure you are not making these mistakes, like in Shiva's case, you know, where you're giving soap, which means a lot more than just, I thought you would enjoy some scented soaps. Diane Gottsman or Jeff Gallick?
You know, I think, and Jeff, I'll just jump in here, and then I'm interested to see what you have to say. But I think that the fact that you're washing your hands of someone by giving them soap is an unkind gesture to begin with. It's telling them that they're done. So I think that we always err. You know, you don't want to give somebody toothpaste. That would be cruel. You don't want to give them deodorant. So now, unless you're donating to a charity where people really need these things and they're asking, you know, or a church is asking, but to give it to a friend or family member to send a message is simply not a gift. It's not kind. And gift giving is all about doing something kind for someone else. So I love what Carolyn said. You know, it gets sticky and messy if you tell somebody you don't want that gift, you know, after so many years. Just let them do what makes them happy, especially if it's something that doesn't hurt anyone. It's not going to be tracked or trailed. You know, just if you don't like it, put it away or reshare it with someone who would like it.
Well, Maya writes, I'd love to hear about gender expectations mentioned in this discussion. Isn't it ironic that Santa is a white man when everyone in line for gifts at big box stores is a woman? Carolyn Hax, you've written some about gender roles around gift giving. What have you been finding around this?
I think it's one of the last areas of awareness in the, because we're talking a lot about the mental load in a lot of hetero households or hetero couples, and that the women tend to carry the mental load of doing a lot of the childcare or managing the calendar. And I think the gift, and we've made, I think there's just at least a lot of progress in the talk about this, but I think the maybe because this is only in full force once a year, it just seems to bubble up and then go away, and then the women are back in line again buying the gifts. It's just, I think it's one of those things people are putting out, like, I will fight this fight later.
Mm. So you don't feel like it's really changing?
I don't feel like it's really changing. Although I do think that the gift exchanging customs are changing faster. And so I think, for example, I might be in a family where the women are carrying the load of organizing gifts, but at the same time, I'm also in a family where the gift giving has just died down. It's just way lower. There's just so much less attention to it. There are so many fewer gifts being bought and given. I think the societal wave against stuff is actually stronger and negating some of the problem in the gender disparity. So I'll take a win where I can get it, I guess. But I don't think that I haven't seen huge progress in getting more fairness here.
But maybe, as you said, the decrease in expectations of getting stuff is going to help with that. Some.
Right.
Well, Carolyn,
yes. Something else is shortening the list. As long as the list is shorter, I think that's okay.
Well, Carolyn Hax, I know you need to leave us, and we so appreciate having you on today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Carolyn Hack, she's an advice columnist for The Washington Post, and she's written the hootenanny of holiday horrors on an annual basis for some time now. We've got Diane Gottsman still with us, founder of the Protocol School of Texas, and Jeff Gallick, associate professor of marketing at Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business. And you, our listeners, giving us your gifting questions and stories. And I'm going to go next to Michelle in San Francisco. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Excellent. I just wanted to share the idea of the white elephant party. I'm from the East Coast, and we used to do there all the time, and now I have two different parties that I go to every year here, and it's a wonderful way to celebrate sort of those awkward presents that maybe you don't want, or they're just about the celebration of having this exchange, just the action of. So people are really excited to get the can of Spam or the napkin holders in that contest. That's my comment.
That's great, Michelle. And this is also something that folks have done in workplaces, Diane Gottsman, or, you know, if you have a lot of in-laws and you want to focus on gift giving to the kids and just want to do a white elephant for the group itself. But how do you make sure that white elephants don't go wrong? Because there are some cases when people take it seriously and they really try to get something nice. And then,
yes, and so I think that we have to be very, very clear when we're calling the gift exchange, whatever we're calling it. You know, a white elephant gift could mean something that you really don't like a bag of, or something funny. I was at a white elephant exchange where they gave away, you know, clean rolls of toilet paper and 2 lotto tickets. Well, other people were giving away really pretty trays, and, you know, so there's confusion. So I think when you make the invitation and you decide what you're going to do, whether it's Secret Santa, White Elephant, Dirty Santa, you know, that's another one, and that's not a nasty. It's just, you know, they called it a Dirty Santa because it was all the stuff they didn't like. Be clear. So no one is in an uncomfortable or awkward situation. But it's a great way to have fun, to show camaraderie, and maybe if you're going to get rid of some stuff that you don't want, somebody else might love it. You know, make sure it's useful.
Well, let me go to Suze in San Francisco. Hi, Suze.
Hi there. How are you?
Well, what's on your mind?
Good. I just have to say, as a person, as a family who's struggling to sort of make it in San Francisco, Christmas has been a very, very difficult time for us. We tend to go into a lot of debt to make sure our 2 children are getting what they need. But the other thing I think about, one of your guests talked about, you know, how, you know, it's insulting, you know, to give soap, and I understand that in different cultures. But I think that people are always looking for, like, what we do is we look for something that might be, you know, financially, you know, tangible for us, and we want to give it to somebody, and we're not always thinking of those norms. But also, I also wanted to say, with our family, and this was how I grew up in Maine, we also had this thing where we always just gave those extra little special things in the stockings or whatever, but they were, you know, they were necessities. You know, it was like you knew that once a year you got your leggings, or you knew that you got, and, you know, your nice shampoo that you wanted before. And it makes it just much more palatable because you're dealing with that, and it takes the pressure off those of us families who are just feel overwhelmed. There's teacher presence. There's all this stuff that you're expected to give. And we need to go back to, it's got to be from the heart, and it shouldn't stress us all out or make us go into debt. Even with our children, we can have healthy conversations with them about, like, hey, you know what? We really want you to have what you want, but this is what we can do for you. You know, older children, of course, little children, not so much. But I just feel like it's a very stressful time of year for people who are struggling.
Yeah. Suze, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would agree with you. And just in my own experience, yes, we grew up with the holidays being the time of getting the necessities on an annual basis. So thanks for sharing that story. And Anthony writes, one of the best gifts I've ever received was such a small thing, a $1.95 sandwich spreader. It was given to me and my wife by her father when we first moved in together more than 30 years ago. He gave it with a chuckle, saying it was one of the most important things you can have. He has passed on 20 years ago. He has passed on 20 years ago, and now I think of him and his laughter nearly every time I use it. And I think that so underscores, Jeff Gallick, what you were saying about the monetary value of things really not figuring into the receiver's mind. It is so much about the thought, the feeling, or any other sort of priceless association that you can put on some of these small things that you can attach to these small things.
I think that's right. One of the kind of most ubiquitous findings that we have with gifts is that if a gift has some form of sentimental attachment or sentimental value, which in this case it clearly does, that gift remains enjoyable for nearly forever. So we've conducted studies for up to a year in duration, and we see that gifts that have sentimental value don't become less enjoyable. That is not true for gifts that are more mundane. Within a couple of weeks, they become, you know, they're in the drawer not being used anymore. And so I think that writer is absolutely correct, that if a gift can be sentimental in value, the monetary value is completely immaterial.
And Tina in San Francisco, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Going back to a couple points before, when the person said that when you donate in someone else's name, you are the one that's going to be harangued to give more. But in this day and age, that's not true. I've tried to do that, and they want the name and address of the person so they can send them a card, saying that you did this. Then that person has been on their mailing list. And they do ask for phone numbers and emails, and you can give it or not give it.
Yeah, certainly so something to keep in mind and check if people don't want their contact information out there because they're inundated. As is. Well, Jane writes, I have two kids and my husband insists that their gifts be completely equal in cost. I don't agree. Your thoughts? Diane Gottsman, what do you think about that?
In cost,
between kids.
Between kids. I don't know that the kids are noticing, unless it's something that's just so disparate. So I think that what is more important is what it means to the kids and do they want it. One child may really want something that's $10 and another child may want an experience. So I think it's difficult to judge based on the cost. I think it's more important to think about the individual. And that's across the board. Gifts do not have to be expensive. They should be memorable. Because how many of us can remember, and even in terms of gifts, how many of us can remember a particular gift that we got 3 years ago if it's just a random gift, but we will remember memories, good and bad, around the holiday table, around the living room, sitting around for that particular moment.
Well, Nydia writes, in our family, I have made it a tradition that my children and I choose something to make for our friends and family members. We have made mosaics, specialty foods, cookie recipes in a jar, and all sorts of other items that we feel like people will appreciate and enjoy. I've always found that our loved ones appreciate the time and thought that go into these homemade gifts. And let me go to Claire in Berkeley. Hi, Claire.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say, in my family and in the culture, my family, German, Midwestern culture was very much like giving practical gifts. And so giving things like soap and toothpaste were totally normal in my family. And it's something we continue to give and kind of gives a little bit of a chuckle. And so I think that this conversation is really culturally located. And I feel like when we're giving gifts across culture, knowing a little bit about the culture of the person you're gifting can go a really long way. And I think when you can give a gift that's resonant in that person's culture, it can be an even better gift because it says I've done some research and I know enough about your culture to know that, this would be a nice gift.
Yeah, and actually earlier in the conversation, Jeff Gallick was saying that practical gifts are often the best gifts to people as well. And so I think you're just hearing sort of different opinions here, but also the person who commented on soap was actually speaking about something very specific in terms of the way that it's viewed in their own culture. But I really appreciate the reminder, Claire. Thanks.
And to be clear, because I had commented about washing your hands of, that's a different message than putting, getting a stocking and filling it with toothpaste and toothbrush and things that we can use. When people accept that graciously, and it's something that we do within our family, because I do that with my family. Every year, my son and son-in-law get shaving cream, razors, toothpaste, toothbrush, because that's what they want and they enjoy. But it's different when you're sending a negative message. Those are two different thoughts.
One of the things that's clear in this discussion and has been brought up explicitly is that this is stressful. Why does it have to be so stressful? And so what is your advice for dealing with the stress? And I'll start with you, Jeff Gallick.
Sure. So if I had a magic wand, what I would do is I'd ask people to stop giving gifts on the holiday. And I think one of your callers actually mentioned this as well. So this relates to some research that we're working on right now, looking at obligatory versus non-obligatory gifts. So Christmas, birthdays, anniversaries, those tend to be obligatory gifts, right? There's an expectation about receiving something. A random gift on a Tuesday is not expected, but it is overwhelmingly well received. So I'll give you one example from our research. We found that if you give a $50 gift card, like an Amazon gift card, on Christmas, it makes you just as happy as if you give a $5 Amazon gift card on Tuesday, right? On a random Tuesday. You can spend way less money, be way less stressed out, and provide just as much happiness to a recipient if we just kind of get away from these forced cultural norms about when to give gifts, how much to spend, and so on. So my advice would be, you know, just think about that random Tuesday as much more impactful to your recipient than anything you're going to do on Christmas.
And you could start that obligatory process with people who you know you're safe to do that with, probably, right? The people who are closest to you who wouldn't judge you for saying, hey, why don't we try this non-obligatory thing where it's not going to be on Hanukkah or Christmas, but it's going to be, you know, when you least expect it.
I think that's right. Easier said than done, of course.
Yes. Diane Gottsman?
So I think that we put so much pressure on ourselves to give the gifts, and then it becomes, and for many, it becomes a competition, or for many, it becomes, oh gosh, did I give enough? So I think if we just take a deep breath, make a list, who do we want to give to, stick to that list, and really not just enjoy the season. Enjoy your family and your friends, and really make a concerted effort to find experiences throughout the holiday season. It could be a cup of cocoa. It could be, you know, watching a movie together. Just really think about the memories as opposed to the glitter and the wow factor, because that is not going to last as long as the memory.
And Diane Gottsman is the founder of the Protocol School of Texas, and Jeff Gallick is the Associate Professor of Marketing at Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business. Thanks both of you for joining us this morning, and thanks to our listeners for their questions and stories. I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael today. You've been listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.